Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We are taking you up to 6:15. Nats baseball tonight. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler. Pre-game right then, and then 6:45, first pitch.
We are exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Got the NFL coming up on this Beltway Blitz, and then we will talk with Mackenzie Gore of the Washington Nationals minutes away as they get ready for the Rays. But let's kick things off. College football ahead of what is a massive collection of games. And to help us do that, let's talk to Wes Reynolds of VEASAN, their network. And Wes, everybody's looking at the big one this weekend, but I actually want to start with the night game that is the dessert, so to speak. This LSU-Clemson night game under the lights in week one. Handicap it for me and just give me some headlines.
Yeah, certainly going to be one of the better games on the schedule in the battle of the Death Valley Tigers, which Death Valley is going to go ahead and win. But, you know, LSU's defense, we know that it's been lacking over the last several years. I think that they're going to have a little bit of improvement, but this is a potent Clemson offense now. Now you've got Klubnik in his third year as a starter, a little bit more comfortable. Clemson with a new defensive coordinator, by the way, Tom Allen, who was previously at Penn State and did a good job. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game in this one with these two teams. Neusmeyer, they let him throw it all over the yard, and now they've kind of taken the chains off Klubnik at Clemson. So over 57.5, and you know, usually in a big game with two top-10 teams like this, I would look under, but I think over 57.5 is going to be the way to go tomorrow night.
Wes, I'm going to fast forward to Sunday night again before we get to the great big one that everyone's focused on. Notre Dame-Miami, a sneaky, really good game. I don't love either quarterback situation there. Handicap that one for us.
Yeah, I don't either, especially with the rookie going on the road, essentially a freshman for Notre Dame. And Notre Dame, people kind of slept on them last year, and it was kind of like they were just always there. And then somehow, some way, they get to the national championship game, and I think very much earn their way there. So now maybe a little bit more expectations of Notre Dame. They're stocked, you know, Marcus Freeman, he's one of the best in college football. When's the NFL going to eventually pluck him from South Bend? I wonder when we're finally going to get Mario Cristobal, though, win that big game for the U, win that feature game. And I'm not in love with the quarterback situation either. It's going to be Carson Beck, the former Georgia quarterback, of course, taking the reins for the U, but have not bet this game. The under is certainly getting some support in the market, I think, because of the uncertainty of both quarterback situations. So that makes sense, an under 51.5. But I kind of lean Miami here getting three against the Irish. The old Catholic versus convicts rivalry certainly renewed, but it's about time for Mario Cristobal to step up and win one of these big games, and maybe it's coming Sunday night.
Wes Reynolds, VEASAN, talking college football on Grant and Danny here on our Blitz. All right, let's get to the big one. Number one, Texas. Number three, Ohio State. What's the current line? And then also coach me up on the quarterback situations here, especially Texas. And is this finally when we get to see Arch take off?
Yeah, this line's been moving really all over the place. It's been a lot of early Texas money. This was three over the summer. And then in some shops out in Las Vegas, they became a favorite. So now it's, depending on your shop, -1, pick 'em, +1. Ohio State still might be the favorite. But, two questions at quarterback. Arch Manning, by the way, has never thrown a pass on the road in a college game. They pretty much used him as like a running option in a lot of those games or in some mop-up duty. And then Julian Sain, who is really talented. Keep in mind, he was originally at Alabama. So if you're originally there playing quarterback and in the mix, then you're good enough certainly to play at Ohio State. But Texas is the money because it is the revenge from the playoff spot last year where they lost. And they quite frankly blew it with bad play calling and scoop and score on the strip sack. State's lost a lot on defense, especially on the defensive line. New defensive coordinator is Matt Patricia with Jim Knowles now at Penn State. I think the market probably has it right. I think Texas is going into Columbus and getting a win.
The loser of this game, .. and the winner of this game, .. as you kind of go into it, what it means for each team, talking Texas, Ohio State here, Wes.
Well, I think if Texas wins, it absolutely makes them the team to beat. I think in their favor to win in the SEC. Of course, Georgia is still up there. Alabama is expected to have a little bit of a resurgence this year, but I think it makes Texas the clear number one team. And with Ohio State, they got some challenges in the Big Ten because there's a lot of people, including myself, that are very high on Penn State. This is the best roster James Franklin has ever had at this school. A lot of experience, great running game, experienced quarterback. And the Big Ten, I just think, is a little bit top-heavy. You got Penn State. You still can't ignore Oregon. And is there going to be another Indiana? And might it be Indiana again? Or might it be Illinois? Or might it be USC? So Ohio State, I still think, very much in the mix. And you can't forget about the school up north, as they call it, Michigan, who is expected to be a lot better in rebound from last year.
The game that we're airing on this station this weekend is the Virginia Tech Hokies and 13 South Carolina. The line is actually tighter than we anticipated. We were talking about this earlier. Do you think the Hokies can give South Carolina a run for their money on Sunday?
I absolutely do. And Virginia Tech, they had a lot more expectations last year. It's like, okay, this is the rebound year. And then they go 6-7. Brent Pry, 16-21. He's clearly on the hot seat. And I'm sure if you guys hear it, it's like, hey, let's bring Beamer Ball back, you know? And he's been hearing that too. But two new coordinators, both on offense and defense. You got a South Carolina team that lost five pros to the NFL, five kids drafted off that defense. And South Carolina, while they're a really good program, they're not LSU or Alabama where it's just like, okay, we lose all these guys to the pros, we just replace them with five stars year after year. South Carolina doesn't have that luxury yet. And I know this is big for Shane Beamer to take on his alma mater, but I thought this line was a little rich. I think maybe South Carolina is getting a little bit overhyped this season.
Wes, really appreciate the info, man. Enjoy the weekend.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me.
There he goes. That is Wes Reynolds. Let's talk NFL, please. Rob Reichel joins us, Conley Media and Forbes, to go around the NFL. Rob, heard about any good trades lately?
No, I hope you guys got one you can tell me about.
What do you make?
Oh, yeah, wait. There was, all was right, one in my backyard yesterday, wasn't there? Yes.
So, I mean, tell us about this. It is so unexpected, so crazy. None of us ever thought this was real, but I guess there was enough smoke that it happened. From Green Bay's perspective, how did this come together, and kind of can you believe it?
No, I mean, I really still can't, and I don't think much of Packer Nation can either, guys. I mean, Green Bay's been a bridesmaid so many times in the last 20 years for guys like Tony Gonzalez or Khalil Mack or Marshawn Lynch, people like that. They're just they kind of dip their toe in the water, but they're never super serious. And I'll be honest, there were a lot of people, myself included, that just never thought Jerry Jones would pick up the phone when it came to this offer. But I mean, this is the biggest move in terms of a signing or a trade in Green Bay since they added Reggie White in 1993, and that led to a Super Bowl. There's a lot of parallels between the career paths at this point, you know, of Parsons and Reggie White. It may be the missing piece, guys. Green Bay has a terrific roster top to bottom. They don't have Hall of Fame players, and you guys know you need a couple Hall of Fame-type dudes on your roster if you're going to win Super Bowls, and they went and got one yesterday. And again, most of Wisconsin is still in shock.
How good did you think the Packers were before and now after the trade?
Well, I thought the ceiling was about 11-6. The floor wasn't going to be terrible, maybe 8-9, 9-8. I think they're a 13-win team potentially now. Their big issue is going to be stopping the run because both of their defensive tackles from a year ago are now gone, and they don't have, at this point anyways, they don't have people that are of the same level of quality. I mean, if I'm an opposing offense, I try to run the ball down their throat all night, but their pass rush is going to be big-time legit. They had 45 sacks the way it was last year, and that was with Kenny Clark, the defensive tackle they traded in this transaction with one sack on the season. You know, Parsons should, if he continues doing what he's done, he's a double-digit guy. I mean, they should be in the mid to high 50s in terms of sacks. I mean, that pass rush is going to be really legit. I mean, I would say now, guys, the ceiling is 13-4, and the floor is probably no worse than 10-7, 11-6. And the general manager and head coach here, guys, they were under some heat, and I guess they still are. They have to win a lot of football games, I think, to come back in 2025. But this is a move that should help them both. You probably get a contract extension because it's kind of a make or break year for both of those guys. The new team president, Ed Policy, has said he doesn't want to bring guys back who are lame ducks, and both Brian Gutekunst, the GM, and Matt LaFleur would have been entering the final year of their contract. So it really is kind of a make or break year. And adding Micah Parsons to that mix certainly helps those guys have a chance to keep their jobs.
Rob, after the year that Jordan Love had a couple years ago to end 2023, where I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was like 18 touchdowns and one pick over his last nine games or so, Everyone's thought about this leap that was about to happen. And I know there was injuries in the like last year was kind of beat up, but a lot of folks were disappointed. Give me kind of a state of the union on Jordan Love as a quarterback, as a guy that at one point was part of everybody's top 7, 8, 9, 10 conversation. Where's he at now in the prognosis for this year?
Yeah, I think that's still a fair place to put him, maybe in that range of about 10. And you're right, the way he finished 2023, he actually had a stretch in there where he was 23 touchdowns and one pick until the fourth quarter of that divisional playoff game against San Francisco, and he threw two fourth-quarter interceptions. But leading up to that, I mean, he was on a hot streak that Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, guys like that have never had in Green Bay. I think a couple of things, and Jordan this offseason, he kind of took offense to the term last year. He regressed this or that. I would just say, guys, more than anything, he probably plateaued. A couple of things hurt him. He had the knee right away, obviously, in that game in Brazil against Philadelphia in week one. He had a groin injury he suffered later on, middle of the season, in a game down in Jacksonville. And then really, guys, his receivers killed him all year. They led the league in drops, the drop percentage and drop ratio, whatever stat you want to throw out there. His receivers just really hurt him. They had bad years as pass catchers. That's why they took Matthew Golden in round one, who's already this summer looked like the best receiver on the football team. He's got a couple of young tight ends who are emerging. I would think he's a guy who's going to have a pretty big bounce back as long as he stays healthy, and he's probably in that mid-30s for touchdowns if he can stay on the field.
Rob Reichel, Conley Media and Forbes on our Blitz talking Pack. Thank you for the time. Maybe we'll catch up in week two ahead of Thursday Night Football.
That would be a lot of fun. It's going to be quite a start for Green Bay. Detroit week one, Washington week two, all within 5 days at Lambeau. I'm telling you right now, the state's going bongos already.
Wow, I believe it. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
See you, bud.
He was great. That's 10 out of 10 content, 11 out of 10 Green Bay accent.
I mean, turbo Wisconsin right there.
If he didn't get married at Lambeau Field or just eat a wheel of cheese, I'll eat your phone. let's talk Nats baseball.
And we're joined now by Mackenzie Gore of the Washington Nationals. Mackenzie, thanks for the time on Grant and Danny. Very rare that you get to go to Yankee Stadium and pitch in one of those historical big league environments. What was the experience like being on the mound there?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, you know, I've pitched there before, but it's always cool to play there, especially being in the NL and we don't get to go there much. So, yeah, it was cool. We didn't necessarily win like we wanted to, but, you know, playing in Yankee Stadium is always fun.
Are there a few spots like that for you where, you know, you recognize the history that a place has stood for 100 years? I know that's New Yankee Stadium and it's not as old, but like, are there some spots for you where you sort of take it in a little bit, allow yourself a moment or two to kind of, you know, drink in the nostalgia?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always places, you know, Fenway's cool, Dodger Stadium. I like playing at Wrigley. So, you know, all the older places that have been around a long time, they're always fun to go to and play at for sure.
Mackenzie Gore presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Mackenzie, you mentioned that the series didn't go great. I mean, particularly yesterday, there was just one of those innings where it just wouldn't end, right? I think you guys had the most pitches thrown in an inning in the Codify StatCast era, whatever we're calling it. Like, when something like that happens and you're in the dugout, luckily you're not on the mound for it. Like, what's the demeanor like? And is anything even being said to kind of lift guys up? Or are you just kind of on to the next as big leaguers? Because stuff like that occasionally can happen.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you just want to end. You really just don't want to see anybody out there giving up runs like that. Or, you know, obviously it's your team, you're trying to win. But, you know, that feeling, we've all been out there in long innings. It's not a good feeling. But there's also just not much to say right after it happens. You just kind of move on to the next inning and try to have, you know, at that point it was just try to have some good at bats. And but yeah, I mean, that's just a really tough situation for anybody. So yeah, it's tough to watch, and yeah, there's not a whole lot you can really say.
So. As a pitcher, you probably can't relate to this sentiment, or maybe you can, I don't know, but I've always loved this about baseball, right? Sometimes you're on the other side of it, ideally. But there is no clock. It's not like you could just run it out. Like, at some point, someone's got to throw a pitch. Someone's got to stand in there and either get a hit or get an out. It's like one of my favorite things about the sport. And I know innings like that happen, and it's not fun when you're that part of it, but on that side of it, rather. But what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes this game so special. You can see things that you've never seen before every day. You're trying to make a funny comment, you know, just when you thought you'd seen it all, something strange happens in a baseball game. It can be just a random play with a certain situation on the bases or whatever it is. That's why baseball is great, because you have to throw the ball. You have to get an out to get to the next guy. And a lot of weird things happen in this game. So.
And that Yankees lineup, McKenzie, is so good, obviously, and playing there is, you know, it can be tough on folks. Just kind of, A, what's that like trying to mow through a lineup that you know is, you know, again, pretty dangerous? And then most specifically, dealing with someone like Aaron Judge, who is, you know, a perennial MVP candidate, having another MVP type year this year as well. Just what's that like going up against, A, a great lineup, and B, a superstar hitter like that?
Yeah, just, you go in and understand how they manufacture runs. I think my start was probably a great example of how they do that. It was quick. And then like four hitters, they have one big swing and, you know, they have three runs. And that's what they do. And like then yesterday, they just kept hitting homers and in that ballpark. So they've got a great lineup, obviously, with Judge. You circle him, but then, you know, you have Bellinger and you have Stanton and all those other guys around him. So you have to pick your spots when you're going to let him beat you or not beat you. And if you do, you just better get the next guy, because they can turn into some crooked numbers. And, you know, they did a good job of putting together a team where they could protect him. And that's why they've won a lot of games.
McKenzie Gore, been a mainstay for the Nationals as an ace lefty and an all-star for them this season, taking the ball every 5 days. His next outing, not until Monday, against the Marlins. When you have a series like this one, where the Rays are in town for three and it's not a team you play very often and you're not pitching in the series, can you kind of let your hair down during the game a little bit? You're not tracking at bats or things as closely because you don't have to worry about facing the lineup?
You're watching the game. All the prep work, you know, I'm getting ready for the Marlins, really, is what I'm doing this weekend. That's kind of how my days are scheduled out, is how we're going to get ready for Miami. And then, I watch the game. But you're always paying attention if you can pick something up that, you know, their pitcher's doing or anything on the field that could help us win. So you're still, you know, you're still kind of locked in, if you can give the hitter something, or if you see that our pitcher's doing something that, you know, maybe with a certain pitch or something. So you're always locked in, just trying to, if there's one thing that can help us win and you can give it somebody on the bench, then you do it.
You've been around a little bit now. These are the dog days. They call it that for a reason. Although the weather's actually been lovely here of late. It doesn't feel like the normal August soup. But how do you prevent from the wear and tear and the fatigue and kind of those that what feels like such a grind? Like, you guys have been at this for 8 months already, you know, just when you guys kind of start your ramp up calendar, how do you kind of stave that off?
Yeah, I mean, as in, well, physically, you know, you got the training staff, but, you know, it's always when you get to this point of the year and, you know, we have not won enough games, it is tough. You just got to understand that you've tried to finish strong, run through the finish line, and end the year on a good note and get ready to go for the next year. There's still a lot of things that can happen in the next month. We all have seen people can have great months. So you just got to keep showing up every day, preparing like you have all year, and get ready to go.
McKenzie Gore on Grant and Danny, presented by Main Street Bank. What's your cheat meal?
Ooh, what is my cheat meal? Probably typically like some pizza. I would say pizza probably is my go-to cheat meal.
What's your toppings of choice?
I'm a pineapple and ham guy. So I kind of like the Hawaiian pizza. So
I think,
and typically some thin crust. I like the thin crust.
Thin crust is great.
Smell what you're
crunchy, a little snaps while you bite down on it. I like that.
Yep.
Have you taken any flack for that pineapple and ham situation? I don't mind it, but I know a lot of pizza purists turn their nose up at it and they think they invented it. I mean, it's a little bit too much. Have you taken any guff from guys?
Yeah, people don't love it. They think it's weird, which it probably is a little weird, but I think once you kind of get over the fact that it's pineapple on your pizza and you just taste it, I've never really met someone that, they might say they don't like it just because of what it is, but, you know, most people don't hate it once they try it.
They hate the idea of it.
It's the idea.
But the execution isn't as bad.
Yes.
Makes sense. Sure. McKenzie, we appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
You got it. Presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Next, Deebo Samuel was on the show yesterday. He pointed out that he wanted to come to the Commanders, more so than even the other way around. He was reaching out to them when he was on the trade block. We'll get into the Commanders as a destination team. We'll do that next on The Fan. Thanks to Mackenzie Gore and the Nationals, and that there was your Beltway Blitz. Grant and Danny on The Fan. We'll take you up to 6:15. Nats pregame, Charlie and Dave at that time. Fantasy at 5 in a half hour, 30 minutes out. Mike Clay of ESPN, he is awesome breaking down fantasy. Because we've done all the position groups all week long, we figured we would just hop around with some big storylines, and then also a deep dive into the Commanders with him. So that's coming up in a half hour right here on G&D. I told you, though, I wanted to talk about Deebo Samuel, what he said on the show yesterday. I thought one of the most interesting answers we got from him was on coming to Washington and the fact that he wanted to be here. So the way that it worked, according to him, was he was allowed to seek a trade. He calls his agent and says, here are the three teams I want to play for. Let's work on this. One of those teams was the Commanders.
Very unusual for us.
You and I talk all the time about the possibility, now that you have Jaden Daniels in a front office that people respect, of becoming a destination city, of becoming a team that star players, this is a former All-Pro, this is a former Pro Bowler, this is a big name that a bunch of teams would have been curious to add on a cheap deal in the final year of a contract, that you're going to get phone calls from agents now saying, hey, we want to go there. And he explained why he wanted to come here. But this was Deebo Samuel on the show yesterday.
So me and my agent got on a call after John Lynch and the guys granted me permission to seek a trade. We got on a call and he asked me what my top three was, and Washington was one of the top three. And, you know, me not even thinking at the time, just, you know, I was just in the motions of like naming like places where I wanted to go. Over here, they had a really, really good quarterback, just went to the NFC Championship. So like, you know what I'm saying? They're building something special here. So I was like, why not? And then my agent and Adam Peters got to talking, and then we got it done.
Deebo, yesterday, right here on The Fan, if you missed the interview, you could grab it at thefandc.com when we're done tonight. But isn't that all the evidence you need? Isn't that the proof of what we're talking about? When was the last time that a guy who has played in Pro Bowls and or been named a first-team All-Pro has become available via trade and has ranked the Commanders as one of the top three teams he would want to play for when he's seeking a trade?
You have to go back to the very beginning, honestly, of Snyder, when nobody knew that he was a disaster and the worst ever, and thank God he's gone.
They just knew he would give you all the money.
Well, yeah, when he was Daddy Warbucks, when it was a spare no expense, I can't wait to go down there. And he's assembling a super team coming off of 99, right? You remember the buzz and excitement. His first year as owner, they were better than they'd been basically for the previous decade. The 90s, after 91 and 92, and then Joe Gibbs' last year, were never a wasn't very much fun. Offense in the sport, adding a bunch of stars, and you go, oh my God, we are the it team in the NFL. We are big back. And of course, it couldn't have gone worse.
This was more from Deebo on that subject in his next answer.
You know, they had just, like I just said, they came up NFC Championship. You know, we got a great quarterback, great team. Played against Cliff, he was the offensive coordinator over there. And the head coach over there with the Cardinals. And, like, you know, I'm not too far from home. Some of my family live in Baltimore. So it's like, oh, that plays a role for sure.
So I didn't realize the Baltimore part. That's kind of cool because you are right here with family. He went to South Carolina, was on this coast originally, not out west in San Francisco. So those things bode well. It seems to me like, as we talked more about Cliff in the conversation we had with him, that while he didn't use the word like admired him or from afar, those games when you're playing against Arizona and you're seeing some of their scheme and
you
what they're doing.
You notice some stuff, yeah.
Exactly. I think there was an intrigue there, but he did not know Cliff well.
which I'm a little surprised by. Like, Kingsbury has a really good relationship with Kyle, Sean McVay, all those guys are at his wedding a few years ago and, you know, whatever else, or at weddings together, all hanging out, sitting at the same table. I remember Peter Schrager doing a big segment where he posted a bunch of pictures of all the people he hung out with that day on Good Morning Football. Do you remember that bit?
Is that when he strained his back from all the names that he was carrying around that he dropped?
I mean, Peter Schrager was like, here I was with this person. Here I was with this person. And it's like, we get it, man. You were at a wedding with coaches. Like, did you want to tell us any more? Or we just see.
What was the playlist like?
I couldn't believe that was a segment on TV. I was like, this is a wacky.
What did they do for their first dance? Did they cut the cake?
But anyway, I think he was a fan of Kingsbury's offense, even if he didn't know him really at all. But this is largely about Jaden Daniels and the fact that they got to the NFC Championship game last year, and he felt like they had a chance to get back there. Along these lines, did anybody see the comments from DeMarcus Lawrence,
I think it was,
of the Cowboys, who's now at Seattle? He did an interview with Ryan Clark, and that podcast, The Pivot or whatever it's called. Right? Is that right? Pivot? Yeah. So Clark was interviewing him, and he asked him about ending up in Seattle. And he said, look, I had some options. He name checks Washington straight up, which you and I remember when he became available said, this would be a guy that can rush the quarterback.
Look at that.
He's older.
You want that?
I don't like the fact that he's 32, but they don't have a problem with age. Why don't they consider paying this guy? And he basically said the Commanders came after him pretty hard, but he said, I didn't want to jump on the bandwagon with a team that's already really good. He said they were in the NFC Championship game last year. I want to go somewhere where I can help build them up into something. Basically, I didn't want to just hop on in the last second for the team that's about to win the Super Bowl. That's how he was referring to the Washington Commanders, and his lack of interest was that he didn't want to be a bandwagon Johnny-come-lately, basically. What? That's what this is now?
Isn't that crazy?
You don't want to come here because they're already too good?
I don't want to go to some established program, which, by the way, we always underestimate that, right, where the mentalities of certain guys, what they might want or not want. You know, I don't want to live in cold weather. Or I want to live near someplace that has access to a winery. I mean, who knows what they want? But what a strange reason not to come someplace for a chance to win a championship. He's like, no, I don't want to do that. I'd rather build something else. But anyway, put that aside. But that's how he referred to Washington. That was so crazy for me to listen to and hear, where he's going, yeah, that's like as if to say, that's one of the established programs. Like, I'm not going to Baltimore or Kansas City or Buffalo or one of these teams that's ready-made for championship. No. They're too good. I want to go build something. Wait, what?
So this was the interview on The Pivot.
Had an opportunity to, you know, sign with Washington. And it was like, yeah, like, that's a championship contender team. And it's like, me personally, I'm not no bandwagon guy. You know, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, jump on a team because y'all have a good opportunity to go to the championship. It's more of like, well, what am I needed for? If y'all already got that type of team, like, y'all don't need me.
Now, we could debate whether or not that makes any sense. Because to me, I would be like, hey, you're about to win a title. I'm a pretty good player. Let me help you win a title.
You ever think about coming to win a title?
But I don't want to bury the lead of, he was like, yeah, that's a Super Bowl-ish team. I want to go somewhere where they're not a Super Bowl team to help them get there. They're just in that category for this player in the league.
That's the craziest part, man.
Who played them twice last year. Mike in D.C., you're on The Fan. How's it going?
It's going great. How about you?
Good, buddy.
All right. So when I was listening to what y'all were talking about, I remember two Hall of Famers that wanted to come to Washington, and the teams rejected the trade. One was Eric Dickerson back in the day, and the other was Reggie White back in the day. Now, you add Debo to what we're doing, I'm not 1,000% sure that he's going to make this offense prolific. I feel like he takes a lot of the attention off of the middle of the field because he can do a lot there.
Yep.
But, you know, I like his mindset. I'm not mad at it at all. I feel like this is the first time Terry really has a complimentary receiver that will take some attention off of him.
He's never had a player of this caliber, in my opinion, a weapon, I should say, of this caliber at receiver, you know, who can, to your point, help just take a little attention away. I think that's fair. And if it doesn't work, Debo gets hurt. Debo proves that last year's regression was actually him slowing down and not just an offseason. You know, however that happens, you just didn't give up much. It was a fifth-round pick, and it's below market for a player of his upside. The juice is worth the squeeze on paying him in the teens and $1 million against the cap.
If I give up a fifth-round pick and I get 800 total yards, pretty much what he did last year, okay.
In a bad year.
Yeah, sign me up immediately. Again, that to me is the floor, right? Is where last year wasn't very good for him. It's why San Francisco didn't mind parting. A fifth-round pick for that, for a team with some pretty high aspirations, is 100% worth it. So you don't have to look any further than that.
Who or what is hot and who or what is not? Sizzling and fizzling next on Grant and Danny. At 6 o'clock in an hour and 15 minutes, author Gary Myers wrote about the Belichick-Brady relationship. Good football combo with him going into the start of the season. Also was supposed to have authored the Surviving Washington book with Robert Griffin that never happened. We'll ask him about that on The Fan. Who and what is hot and who and what is not? It is time for Sizzlin' and Fizzlin'. Thank you, Dad. Kyle Schwarber was one of my favorite Nationals who was only here for a minute, all time. He came in the 21 season, remember, and ended up in 72 games, hitting 25 home runs, less than half of a season, 50 homer pace. It was kind of the last time baseball was really, really fun around these parts. And then he was gone, blink of an eye. I talked to him at the All-Star game, couldn't have been cooler. He's like, yeah, that was kind of exactly what I wanted. I really wanted to work with Kevin Long, who's his hitting coach still now with Philadelphia, not surprisingly. He said, so I kind of followed him there. I wanted to start hitting the ball in the air more and kind of get my swing back. And it is exactly how I was hoping kind of my career would go. Now, it turned out the Nats traded him and he couldn't stay here. But with the Phillies, he's become an MVP candidate this year. And last night, he hit his 46th, 47th, 48th, and 49th home runs. He actually had a chance with a position player pitching to him.
Like, there's never been a better chance to hit your fifth homer.
To be the first player in history to hit five homers in a game, and he just missed, got under a ball, and popped out. But Kyle Schwarber up to 49 bombs after a four-homer game last night.
1-2.
Drilled deep to right field. He has done it! Four home runs in a game! A three-run home run!
Tom McCarthy on the call there. As good a PBP as there is right now. Phillies have a great booth, him and Kruk. When Krucky's in, so, so good. I think they have Ruben Amaro Jr. sometimes as well, who does a nice job. But Kyle Schwarber, sizzling. I'll also go with YouTube TV. They were on my hot seat. I was mad at them. They got a deal done. Them and Fox are now in cahoots. They're happy together. They're locking arms and skipping around in a field with flowers on either side of them. And I will not be missing any football. Fox, long-term contract signed with YouTube TV. They beat the clock, Terry and the Commanders style. So YouTube TV, sizzling, Danny.
Sizzling. Sizzling, GP. The St. Almond School for Boys athletic program. Why do you ask? I'll tell you. How about yet another St. Almond's Bulldog in the pros? That's Wayne Alex Frederick II, not to be confused with the first. He plays for the Colorado Rapids in the MLS. He's a professional soccer player. St. Almond's soccer program, a little bit nasty. You sleep. But here's where it's really, really cool. He has just made the Trinidad and Tobago national team. That's pretty incredible to me. CONCACAF, I know, I understand it's not Brazil or Italy or England or Germany or France or one of the great traditional powers, but he's got dual citizenship. Parents are from Trinidad and Tobago. And this is someone that's going to compete at one of the highest levels of soccer in the whole world as a 21-year-old made the Trinidad and Tobago national team. That is very cool. Wayne Alex Frederick, the second. That's my sizzling.
All right, I'm going to go fizzling then, and I will start with Jerry Jones. I don't know how much I need to explain here, but he completely bungled his negotiation with a premium defender, one of the best players in the entire NFL, subsequently had to trade him for about 63 cents on the dollar. Jerry Jones then holds a press conference, and it became a bit of a clown show.
The other thing that I would like to say is I firmly did made a commitment to Michael this spring, and paid him, and to pay him.
I firmly did me by the way, was a nice, just as an aside in there, it's a nice way to say I or me. I firmly did, comma, me, comma. So Jerry Jones fizzling. I'll give you one more. ESPN is fizzling. Here's how. I saw this and wanted to bring it up somehow on the show, and this is going to be my window into that. We have reached an anniversary this week of 22 years ago this week that the TV show Playmakers debuted on ESPN. Wildly popular.
Yeah.
Now, I was a kid, and I don't know why my parents were letting me watch it. But
you're like, oh, so it's a show about football. That's fine.
It's a football show. It's kind of like Friday Night Lights, but the NFL. It was a drama about a football team that was dealing with drug issues, domestic violence, all kinds of terrible things. Smashola. People loved it. You know who didn't like it was the NFL. Thought it was terrible. You know who's partners with the NFL? Less so then than now, but they've always been partners with the NFL. They don't actually like work together like they do now after this recent deal, but ESPN. And so they canceled the show almost immediately because the NFL was breathing down their necks. Bad decision. I will always wonder what could have become of that show, Playmakers. It was awesome.
It was incredible. One more sizzling I'm going to sneak in there. Lee Corso. Final game day this Saturday. What an unbelievable journey and career. 90 years old. Obviously, you know, he would be the first one to tell you, past his prime when it comes to being able to deliver the analysis and hijinks and some of the stuff that made that show so great. But he made that show so great. It's one of the great television programs in any genre that we have had. College Game Day is an institution. It is a staple. And he is the, and was, the linchpin of that program. Unbelievable career. Fare thee well. Lee Corso, absolutely sizzling for me. Sizzling, pretty easy. Don't have to look too far. Right down the street, Old Half Street, they play pretty close by. Your Washington Nationals. Last week, we had Bobby Blanco from the Bronx on, and they had just, I think they'd lost, they'd just taken 2 out of 3 from the Mets. And I was like, hey, Bobby, have you noticed? Even though the record's not great, they've played pretty decent baseball lately. I think they're over 500 in their last 15. 5 straight losses where they have gotten mud stomped in those games, outscored 276 trillion to 1, numbers approximate. Gross.
Sizzling and fizzling, a segment on Grant and Danny today via Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Check your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Let's go around the NFL with ESPN's Mike Clay when we return on The Fan.